In the halls of mighty justice, a decision once was made that corporations are like people now, they buy the whole campaign. So the rich are getting richer as we watch it on TV. Our freedom's being taken away. Corporations are not people, they're only criminals and weasels. Corporations are not people, and we're taking our elections back. Oh, the greedy politicians think they have.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Corporations and Democracy for June 12th, 2018. This is the program that examines how corporations dominate our democracy and what citizens are doing to replace corporate dominance with true democracy. I'm Steve Scalmanini with co-host Annie Esposito. The opinions expressed on Corporations and Democracy are those of our guests and the hosts, and not necessarily of the management of Mendocino County Public Broadcasting. Well, it's a week after the California midterm primary election, and there have been plenty of other primary elections throughout the nation in recent months, with more yet to come. And with primary elections comes dark money. So today, we'll look at what dark money is doing during this primary election season. A few articles about dark money recently caught my attention, and they were both from the same organization, the Center for Public Integrity. One is titled, From Secretive Super PACs to Jenny Craig, 2018 Primaries Awash in Cash. And that's from May 20th. And then a few days later, an article was published titled, An Ohio Legislator Defied First Energy Lobbyists, Then a Dark Money Group Helped Sink Her Bid for Congress. So with us today are two of the co-authors of those articles, both of whom report on federal politics for the Center for Public Integrity. Ashley Balzerzak is in her second stint at the Center for Public Integrity after covering state and local politics as an American University Fellow in 2015 to 2016. She previously wrote about federal money in politics and conflicts of interest for Open Secrets blog. Her favorite stories covered foreign lobbying, opaque corporate contributions, and how special interests spend their money. She also worked with the Washington Post investigative team on its police shootings database, a project that won the 2016 Pulitzer Prize in National Reporting. Ashley's work has been published in the Washington Post, the Atlantic, Slate, Time, the Daily Beast, and the Huffington Post. Her undergraduate degree is in journalism from Northwestern University and her master's from American University. Ashley Balzerzak, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And the second article I mentioned above is authored by our second guest, also a reporter on federal politics for the Center for Public Integrity. Sarah Kleiner has reported on a range of topics: state politics, city government, education, mental health, criminal justice, and real estate and financial services during her 13-year journalism career. Her work has won numerous awards, most recently the 2016 Virginia Press Association Journalistic Integrity and Community Service Award. That's for her investigation into the death of a mentally ill jail inmate. In 2015, as a reporter for the Virginian Pilot in Norfolk, Kleiner's series about the lasting effects of toxic Chinese drywall received top awards from the National Association of Real Estate Editors and Society of American Business Editors and Writers. And she was a runner-up in the 2015 Best American Newspaper Narrative Contest. Kleiner also wrote last decade for two Texas newspapers, the Abilene Reporter News and the Midland Reporter Telegram. In May of 2011, she was inducted into the E.W. Scripps Hall of Fame for her reporting in Abilene. Her degree is in journalism and is from the University of Texas at Austin. So let's have a look at dark money in the primaries. Sarah Kleiner, welcome to Corporations and Democracy.
Hi, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks to both of you for spending some time with us. I know you've done an interesting mosaic of the different electioneering phenomenon around the country. And Sarah, maybe we could start with your coverage of an interesting case where a Trump supporter was out-Trumped by other Republicans because she would not bail out a nuclear power plant. Can you talk about what happened to the conservative Christina Hagan, who was running for Congress in Ohio?
Sure thing. So Christina Hagan, as you said, is a pro-Trump state legislator in Ohio, and she was facing Anthony Gonzalez, who was a former Indianapolis Colts and Ohio State University wide receiver, and that was in the May 8th primary there in Ohio. Christina got 41% of the vote. Anthony Gonzalez got 53% of the vote. So here's what Christina says happened in this race. She had been lobbied by a company called First Energy, a major electric company with operations in several states. And they wanted her to support a bill that would have created zero emission credits. And what those would have done, they would have raised electric customers' monthly bills by about 5%, and it's to the tune of $300 million annually, continuing on into the future. And they said they needed this money to shore up their old power plants. So Hagan said that she didn't support the bill because she didn't feel like it was fair to electric customers in the state of Ohio. So after that, she became the target of a dark money group with ties to First Energy. So follow along with me. The Conservative Leadership Alliance is a dark money group, and they are led by Mark Himmelstein, who also happens to lobby for First Energy.
Mm-hmm.
So when I reached out to Mark Himmelstein and First Energy, neither group responded to repeated requests on the phone and emails for comment about why they spent money opposing Hagan and why they spent money supporting Gonzalez. So Hagan was critical of the system for allowing dark money to be spent. And in her own words, she said, people have a right to know who is putting mail in their mailbox and who is putting ads on their TVs, she said. Basically this is an issue of a group coming in and spending money, and we don't know where that money is coming from. It's as a dark money group, they are not required to report their donors, and they have not. I had tried to get their information about the group from the IRS, but they were not listed in any public-facing database. So either there's a delay at the IRS with getting the information into the database, or the group hasn't requested tax-exempt status yet.
Oh, yeah, it's interesting how they can hide everything. So she got her chain jerked by even more conservatives. Does that happen? Have you seen that happen several times in this last go-round?
So CLA, the Conservative Leadership Alliance, has been involved in a few races around the country, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and it would be nice to have more information about what the group is, who they're getting their money from. And, of course, there are other dark money organizations at work, which we'll talk about some of those later, I think, in this program.
One of the questions I have is this a first? It's a first for me. Is it a first for you that a Trump supporter and Trump-supported candidate is saying that she wants to know where the money's coming from her opposition, and is, how historic is that as a milestone?
Well, yeah. So Republicans tend to not be very interested in laws that would increase transparency. In other words, Republicans have, in general, tend mm-hmm. to have more tolerance for the dark money organizations, and historically, they've benefited more from those organizations. Democrats are typically the party that puts forward bills that try to increase transparency, and so that organizations would have to require who they are getting their contributions from. So, yeah, it's pretty significant that a Republican would say that, you know, she's fed up with this dark money system.
Mm-hmm. So to listeners, you know, that's the first, as far as I know, that there's a Republican candidate that lost in the primary and has very clearly spoken against dark money.
So. Got her chain jerked, yeah. And you can see the Democrats pulling their more progressive wing back, and the same thing is happening with the Republicans, I guess. The Koch brothers, now, they're pretty well known to our audience. What have they been up to? I don't know, Ashley or Sarah, who wants to take this one?
Yeah, sure. This is Ashley. I can take this. So NPR has reported that the Koch network has planned to spend about $400 million in the 2018 cycle, which is pretty insane. That's about 60% higher than what they did in 2016, and that was with a presidential campaign, which are typically more expensive. So you can kind of just see the scope of what's going to happen. So far we've seen, I think they spent around $20 million to kind of garner support for the Republican tax cuts. And then if you look on the Federal Election Commission website or opensecrets.org, you can see what Charles Koch and his wife have spent in disclosed funds. They've put like $3 million behind their group, Freedom and Partners Action Fund, which is a super PAC that typically backs conservative candidates and causes, and then put a ton of money into two different committees that also support Republicans going into Congress, the National Republican Congressional Committee and the National Republican Senatorial Committee. So it looks like they're just getting started here.
Oh boy, more insane spending to look forward to.
Amazing. Now, you said 60% over 2016?
Yes, that's what NPR calculated, which okay. is just crazy.
So let me put that in a broader perspective then, extrapolating over the next two cycles, then from so it's from 2016 to 18 is a 60% increase, and it's $400 million this year. Another 2 to 3 cycles, which will be within say 6 years, that'll be $1 billion at that rate of growth.
Yeah, you also kind of have to think, though, the brothers, they didn't want to put support behind Donald Trump, so mm-hmm. they mostly spent in congressional races. So they weren't spending as much money in 2016 as they have in the past. So that is something for context that I think we need to keep in mind.
Yeah. And by the way, is it the Koch brother now, or is it...
Yeah, The New Yorker reported that David Koch retired from Koch Industries, mm-hmm. and they had mentioned that Charles, his older brother, may have forced him out. I haven't done much reporting on this, but that's what Jane Mayer had reported.
Yes.
So that's an interesting story to look into.
Mm-hmm. That was reported just days ago to listeners. So
yeah.
It's very, very recent news, and apparently David's health is apparently suffering right now also, so there's that possible reason for it. So.
Mm. Did you have more? National Security Advisor John Bolton, now he has a PAC and a super PAC with his name all over it, even though he is now in the Trump administration. Is that legit?
So this is Sarah again. Is it legit? He has disassociated himself with the PAC and the super PAC, and the organizations have said that they are going to cease operations. So there are some questions now about whether or not they can continue to keep his name on there if they do indeed continue to raise and spend money. So let's see here. They had the John Bolton Super PAC had $2.75 million cash on hand as of April 30th. And they spent more than $47,000 last month. This is according to their financial disclosures, which covered activity in April. So let's see. Then the John Bolton PAC, which is a separate entity but related to the John Bolton Super PAC, had about $30,000 in contributions in April. Again, there are questions about why they're continuing to raise money and why they have not removed John Bolton from their names. We attempted to reach out to the PAC director, Kathy Flavin, and she declined to explain on the record why that was the case.
It's interesting that Bolton's PAC also was feeding Cambridge Analytica, the now notorious group, Cambridge Analytica. Can you comment on that? How much did they give them?
The Center for Public Integrity reported in March that the John Bolton Super PAC had paid $1.1 million for research to Cambridge Analytica. Our colleague, Carrie Levine, reported on that. And so as your listeners, I'm sure, know by now that Cambridge Analytica is a controversial firm that found to have accessed the private information of tens of millions of Facebook users.
Yes, they did.
So, I heard a rumor that Jenny Craig is getting involved not just in weight loss, but in democracy loss. And apparently she's been busy supporting Trump and Trump-supported candidates. So what kind of activities is she doing to allegedly make America great again?
So I spoke with Ms. Craig, this is Ashley again, because I had seen her name on a filing with a committee called Great America PAC, which supports Trump and like-minded candidates. She donated about $5,000 to them in April, so I gave her a call. And she said that, yes, she supported his agenda and wants to make America great again, and she primarily does that by donating to causes that she feels passionate about. She'd also been supportive of him when he was a candidate, too, and had hosted a fundraiser for him back in July before a lot of people had kind of thrown their weight behind him. Excuse my pun.
Good one.
And that's in the thousands, not in the millions, though, from her, apparently.
Yeah. So she'd give a couple thousand to different candidates and charities, and she's retired now, but says that if a cause catches her eye, it doesn't have to be political. It can be kind of anything that really tugs at her heartstrings. She'll consider donating.
And she also is part of the group Donates to Committee to Defend the President. So I guess that's going to be an important committee.
Yeah, that committee's been spending quite a bit. It used to be called the Stop Hillary PAC, and they had to change their name. And that group puts down thousands of dollars with pro-Trump messaging. So,
one Republican outfit that everybody has been talking a lot about is the National Rifle Association. So they've been throwing money around, I assume.
Yes. They have a political victory fund, and when we looked at filings last month, on the 20th of last month in May, we noticed that if you go back and look at their reports from February, they had $2.8 million in cash on hand, but that increased to $7.6 million in April. And that was because of multi-million dollar infusions of cash in March and April. So that's a major increase, 2.7 times. That's the factor by which it increased. A huge increase in just a couple of months. And if you look at the timing, that happens to be right after the February shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, which left 17 people dead, including many students. So the timing there would indicate that, and their fundraising before that, you know, they've been solid fundraisers all along, but it sort of spiked in March and April. If you go back and look at their fundraising last year as well, after the shooting in Las Vegas, likewise, they got a bump in fundraising after that shooting as well.
That's a really creepy phenomenon, that when there's a school shooting, the NRA's donations go up. That's something to file away as a kind of an interesting factoid.
What a surprise.
Yeah. So there's quite a wonderful accumulation of little studies you have here. One is a Senate Leadership Fund, which is another Republican enterprise here. What is the Senate Leadership Fund up to?
So one of the things that we wrote about in that recent story was that that super PAC then gave $1.4 million to another group called Mountain Families PAC. So that was a new one. And Republicans used that to oppose Don Blankenship in West Virginia, which, and then it looks like they were successful. He placed third in the state's GOP primary. He has since said that he would run as an independent. And I'm not an expert on this, but there have been reports that West Virginia has a sore loser law. So if you lost in a primary, you can't then run in the general. And he's saying, oh, no, my lawyers were like figure it out. So it's unclear if the Senate Leadership Fund will keep trying to keep Blankenship down. The Mountain Families PAC, which they donated to, has since closed down operations, so they would have to do so another way. But that's, so we'll see what happens there.
That's fascinating what you said about 7 minutes. Can you explain that? The Mountain Families PAC, they between the time that they filed their financial report and terminated the organization?
Yeah, I think that just goes to show they disclosed their donors, they filed what they needed to with the FEC that is legally required, and then they filed a report 7 minutes later that then asked if they could terminate. So that's kind of a trend that you see. A lot of these super PACs, they will pop up for one election and then kind of disappear after that. So you'll see thousands and thousands of them, but they're not active across election cycles unless they're a really big name.
Let me remind people, we're talking to Sarah Kleiner and Ashley Balserzak, who are our guides through this election spending craziness here, and we really appreciate having all the research that you've done here for our listeners.
And let me mention that as regular listeners have heard, that the pledge drive that ended a few weeks ago, or that the major portion of it on air ended and didn't quite make our goal. So we're looking for donations, having a lighter drive at this time. And I would love it if a couple of listeners called in with pledges so we make $100 through the show. So the number here for the regular number at the station here is the one to call. That's 895-2324. Would appreciate it if you didn't call in during the pledge drive. Please call in now.
Yeah, or online at kzyx.org. There's that big red button that you can push. You know, the goal for the pledge wasn't a number that somebody just pulled out of the hat. It's the number that of the amount of money that we have to have to operate. So that's why we're still at it, because that is the number. That's what we need to get. So we're still working on that. We're closing in on it, but we have a little ways to go. So I hope you can help out by either calling the office or going online.
Let me mention a bit of conjecture here. I have no idea if the Democratic Party or any dark money that's associated with Democrats is going to be supporting Don Blankenship. So as to help get a Democrat elected there, I'm just curious, have you any idea about that?
I'm not sure about that case, but I know, and I'm sorry I can't talk about specifics, but I know this cycle we have seen a trend of Democrats backing Republicans that they want to make it to the general that they think that they can then beat.
Yeah.
So you are seeing these super PACs in there that seem to be linked with the Democratic Party that are trying to boost up these. And I think there was one in the case of Blankenship, but I can't speak on that specifically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's kind of discredited, I guess. He's with Massey, so I guess he's who the Democrats would like to run, I suppose. But we'll see what happens with that. He might even run as an independent, possibly. So we're going to continue on with some more Republican shenanigans, and then there's plenty of shenanigans from the Democrats, too. We'll get to those in a bit. But what about the Republican National Committee? I bet they're busy.
Yes, they actually had a banner month recently. They raised $12.99 million. That was their fundraising in April, and that's a record number for the month in a non-presidential election cycle year. So far this cycle, they've brought in $184.5 million and spent $166 million. So we'll obviously be keeping an eye on them, and filings are due on the 20th of June. So you guys should definitely check our website, publicintegrity.org, to see what happens after the next round of reports are are due.
Okay. And then, of course, there's Trump. He's been receiving money for his Trump properties, in, I guess, in 2013 and 2014. And that has gone up now that we're in a crucial election, midterm elections. What's going on with the kind of money that he is attracting for his own business?
So, yeah, that's something that's very interesting. So Open Secrets and ProPublica have tools that you can kind of track this. You can see who is paying money, disclosed money, to Trump-related properties. So I was looking at Open Secrets, and it's just really insane to see the jump since Trump became a candidate. So you're looking at 2008, 2010, 2012. 2014, they got maybe $63,000. In 2012, they got $78,000. 2014, $34,000. Okay, that's like five figures. Then you get to 2016, $13.48 million. And so far in this cycle, it's been $2.4 million. And half of that is from the Republican Party. So just to see that increase, it's pretty notable. It's why do these candidates and parties now decide to host fundraisers in the Trump Hotel? It's just a question that you need to ask when you see how this has changed.
Yeah, and you have a note here about the China Construction Bank.
Yes.
What's going on?
Right, there was, just briefly, employees from a state-owned Chinese bank, China Construction Bank, tried to sell $150,000 tickets to dine with President Trump at a Dallas fundraiser. This was according to the Wall Street Journal. Republican campaign officials alerted the Department of Justice. It's against the law for foreign nationals to make campaign donations. And the bank said that it was not an organized effort on their part, that just a few employees were passing along information from outside organizers. So they were kind of saying, like, it wasn't us. So it's kind of still unclear about where exactly that originated.
Oh, wow. This is a fascinating. We're all over the world. Steve, did you have something?
I am just considering the time for the moment. And by the way, let me remind listeners, we're talking to two of the authors of recent articles about dark money in politics, and they're both reporters on federal campaigns and federal issues with the Center for Public Integrity, and that's Sarah Kleiner and Ashley Balzerzak. Let's talk about a few of the Democratic issues. We can go back and cover some of the Republican ones later in the program if we have time. And starting with the first Native American super PAC. Now, there's something unusual. What can you tell us about the success of the 7-Gen super PAC?
Yeah, so 7-Gen leaders, this is kind of the first of its kind that I've seen that basically is trying to elect Native American candidates as well as others that have similar values to what they have and are really fundraising heavily from the tribes. So far they've only backed one candidate, Deb Holland, who was running for the New Mexico 1st District, and she actually won the Democratic primary, which gives her a pretty good chance at winning since it's a pretty blue district. Which would make her the first ever Native American female to ever serve in Congress. So it looks like they've been pretty successful here. They were mostly funded by tribes not in New Mexico, which I found a little interesting, mm-hmm. and then about half of the money that they raised. So they raised about $223,000, and half of that came from a super PAC branch of Emily's List, which is a liberal group that is dedicated to electing Democratic women who support abortion rights. So the group is called Women Vote, and that's where most of their funds came from.
And Helen has a very progressive agenda, so that's very interesting. The PACs can go for just about everything.
Yeah, and shows quite a solidarity among Native American tribes throughout the country then.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I just also wanted to point out, we found it a little ironic because Deb Holland wants to overturn Citizens United, and Citizens United is kind of what helped bring about super PACs, and yet there's a super PAC supporting her and helping her through. And if she can't work with that super PAC, she has no control over it. But it's a little interesting that the thing she wants to get rid of is kind of helping her get to Congress.
Well, and there's probably some help on the other side, too. So from my point of view, she's got the guts to say, let's just get rid of this stuff on both sides and campaign on issues and people to people kind of stuff instead of big money.
Yeah, the cure is in the disease here, maybe. Yeah. So some of these packs have really interesting names, a duty and country pack, and you describe that as a democratic super pack that is secretive. Can you talk about duty and country? What's that? I don't know whether I want to give this to Sarah or Ashley.
Sure. Duty and Country spent $1.4 million opposing Republican U.S. Representative Evan Jenkins and State Attorney General Patrick Morrissey. Morrissey ultimately beat out Jenkins and the embattled former coal executive Don Blankenship, which we've already talked about. So it's not the first time this technique has been used. A Democratic group called Highway 31 used a similar strategy in the controversial Senate special election in Alabama last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we call them secretive because, so this is all legal, but basically they took advantage of the disclosure law and they waited to start spending until after the time frame that would require them to report their donors. So basically, they're spending these millions of dollars in ads, and nobody knows who funded them until like a month after the election. So that's why we call them secretive. It wasn't until now that we really knew who was behind them, which was a handful of liberal mega donors. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was just a mysterious new group.
Mm-hmm. And what can you tell us about the name George Soros, and what's he up to in the primaries?
Sure, yeah. He's been spending a lot of money, as we might expect. He, let's see here, $3 million is the amount of money he contributed $3 million to the Super PAC Priorities USA action, and that was in April. So that was more than 99% of the Super PAC's income that month. So he's a huge supporter of that Super PAC. So far this cycle, Priorities USA Action has raised $9.7 million and spent $4 million, mostly on advertisements, administration, and research. About $500,000 was spent on independent expenditures. They opposed candidate Republicans who were running against incumbents in a lot of cases. One of those was Mike Braun, a Republican running for Senate in Indiana against Joseph Donnelly, incumbent. They opposed Joshua David Hawley, a Republican running for Senate in Missouri, who was running against Democrat Claire McCaskill. They also opposed Scott Baugh, Rocky Chavez, and Bob Huff. They supported Bill Nelson, Florida Democratic incumbent in the Senate, and Joe Donnelly. They've been very busy, and George Soros has been behind a lot of what they've been doing.
Yeah, and also I guess he's made the largest contribution to the Black PAC. Is that new?
In April, the largest that they got in the last reporting requirement. But yeah, which is our colleague Letitia Beecham did a great profile on Black PAC, kind of showing that this is a super PAC that's trying to really harness Black power and Black voters. So they brought a lot of great turnout in the Alabama special race, getting people that hadn't previously really voted, and that voted a Democrat, Doug Jones, into the Senate and in a state that hadn't elected a Dem since 1992. So her piece kind of explores that and talks about, since this is a Black PAC, it's a little interesting that a lot of the donors come from establishment Democrats and white donors, George Soros being one of them.
Let me remind listeners, we're talking with Sarah Kleiner and Ashley Balzerzak from the Center for Public Integrity. They are co-authors of a couple of recent articles about dark money in the primaries. And let me mention that the call-in number here to ask any questions, make any comments about the topic is 895-2448. Again, 895-2448 in area code 707, of course.
Okay, we're talking about Democratic mega donors. Well, what do you know about Tom Steyer? What is he up to?
I actually got a chance to spend some time with Tom Steyer a couple of months ago. He came through the D.C. area on a tour, a multi-city tour, and he is trying to impeach the president, and he's trying to garner support. And then there are also questions about, is he trying to increase his profile for a possible political run? Otherwise, he is still spending a ton of money. He pumped $13.5 million into his super PAC, Next Gen Climate Action Committee, and that was in April. And so his total donations to the group are now $18.9 million so far this year. He has said that he plans to spend $30 million on the 2018 midterms alone, and he's really supporting Democrats and pushing for them to get elected.
So we were talking about the NRA before and how their donations go up when there's a school shooting, and somebody else's, their donations go down. This is like almost creepy, but Democratic Representative Gabrielle Giffords of Arizona, who was shot and gravely injured several years ago, she has a PAC, I guess, for gun control. What's happening with Giffords' PAC?
Yeah, so we looked at Giffords' PAC starting in February after the Stoneman Douglas shooting, and they raised $2.2 million. The next month, it went down to $1.4 million in March, and then in April, $654,000. So it seems each month that is further away from the shooting, they get about half the number of donations.
Wow, that's a really interesting corollary. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to think about that.
I don't know what kind of traction they get with candidates, or how they're doing with the candidates where they're spending money.
So another group that people are familiar with, I think, is Emily's List. And are they spreading money around? What are they doing?
Sure. Ashley mentioned this group a little earlier. And so Emily's List has it's a pro-abortion rights organization, pushes for the election of Democratic women, and it operates Women Vote, a super PAC. And Women Vote spent $2.3 million in April, which was up from $265,000 in March. So that's a ninefold increase in 1 month. The amount that Women Vote collected also increased to $2 million in April, up from $429,000 in March. So Women Vote joined with Black PAC to support Stacey Abrams, who is trying to become the first Black female elected governor in the United States. This is in Georgia. She clinched the Democratic nomination in May, in a May primary in Georgia, and she's going to face either Lieutenant Governor Kasey Cagle, the top Republican vote getter, or Secretary of State Brian Kemp, and those two are vying for their party's nomination in a July runoff.
So we have some counter PACs happening here. One is Working for Working Americans, and they have a couple million dollars.
Yeah, so that's a super PAC that's mostly funded by a union called United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners. And the latest that we had seen from them in April was they gave $2 million to House Majority PAC, and that's a super PAC that tries to get Democrats elected into the House. So big transfer of funds there.
Well, let me remind listeners again the call-in number here if you'd like to get in on the conversation, 895-2448.
Okay, and we got one more Democrat here to talk about, a Democrat from Texas, and then we're going to go back to finishing off our list of Republicans. We want to make sure that we got the Democrats included, too, because our list of Republicans is sort of long. So, Beto O'Rourke, Democrat from Texas, who's he?
So he's running for the Democratic, as the Democratic candidate, and he is kind of almost keeping up with Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz raised $19.3 million as of the last report, and O'Rourke raised $13.2 million. So they file four times a year, so the next time we'll see what's happening is July 15th, and Senate candidates file by paper. So it takes us even longer to then kind of see what they sent in to the Federal Election Commission. So we'll have to wait a little bit longer to see.
Well, it still seems historic that he's keeping anywhere close to the fundraising by Ted Cruz.
Yeah, this is quite a drama. It's just unfolding and unfolding. So we mentioned before the Committee to Defend the President, and you said that they had to pay a FEC fine. What's going on with the Committee to Defend the President, formerly known as Stop Hillary?
So we had mentioned them a little bit earlier. We had found on their report that they paid a $3,700 fine to the FEC because they had made some errors and omissions on some of their campaign finance reports. We found that a little notable because our colleague, Dave Leventhal, actually did a report that was showing that a lot of committees don't pay fines, even if the FEC says you owe us this for mistakes. He found that 160 political committees and different groups owe the government more than $1.3 million worth of unpaid fines, and it's really difficult for the FEC to collect them. So a lot of committees just kind of go on and live their lives. So it's nice that the Committee to Defend the President actually did.
Well, that's interesting. So a committee that owes these fines could just continue. There's no, they don't get shut down. They can just continue what they're doing.
Yeah, unfortunately, the FEC doesn't have the resources to go after every single one of them. And if you guys look at Dave Leventhal's story, he does a great job at really breaking down the process. There's a couple of steps where they try to go after that, and after that, that you're just kind of can kind of get away with it.
So everybody's familiar with the Vice President Pence, and he has some money to play with. The Pence brothers and the Vice President, what are they up to? That's a Great America Committee, right?
Mm-hmm. The Great America Committee. So far this cycle, they've raised $2.3 million. Their biggest donors appear to be corporate executive types, CEOs, presidents of companies. Nearly 180 people gave the PAC $5,000 a piece. So that's quite a few of those contributions. They spent most of their money, $1.7 million, on events, administrative expenses, gifts, and they contributed about $457,000 to other committees, including $105,000 to the NRCC, the National Republican Congressional Committee.
Uh-huh. And also you said that they have a backing from a Florida-based prison operator. That's one of their big donors to their PAC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the GEO group.
And then they're supporting Sununu. That's a name I haven't heard in a while. Oh, was this Chris Sununu? Yeah. Continuing on, we just have about 15 minutes left.
And let me mention again, 895-2448, if you want to get in on the conversation.
Our listeners like to call in all at once at the last moment, so if you want to get in on this, if you have comments or questions, it would be good to call now before we get close to the end, and we have a call right now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, friends. It's Acorn.
Hi, Acorn.
Would you both, as a judge of Boonville, would you all spend some time talking about California?
Okay, thanks for the call. Let me see what our reporters and researchers have to say about California. Did you find, I guess we have a little bit with Tom Steyer and some of the Californians. Do you have anything that you've noticed in particular about California? Sarah,
to be honest,
I can talk a little bit about one particular race. So let's see here. I think it was the 48th district in California. Representative Dana Rohrabacher. He's running for re-election in that district. So it's a really close race. Some analysts are saying that it's basically a toss-up. And he was, he got some money from Christopher Ruddy, who is the CEO of the conservative news outlet Newsmax. He was up against the I guess y'all are already familiar with the top two primary race system in California, since you're based there, obviously. But so he was up against a slate of other candidates, and the second, I know that Democrats were worried that the second place would also be a Republican, but it was not. A Democrat won second place and will appear on the ballot, and that was Hans Kjerstad. And so all the Democrats in the race raised a bunch of money, at least $900,000. Rohrabacher got $1.5 million. So let's see here. That Kjerstad came out ahead just barely, squeaked by Rauta, Harley Rauta, in the June 5th primary. So he'll be on the November ballot.
Another interesting thing about California, so I like to play around with open secret stuff because I used to work there, and they have a list that shows you the races that have the most outside spending. So basically, other than the candidates, what super PACs, nonprofits, kind of groups that aren't affiliated with the candidates, who cares? Like, who is spending millions there? And California comes up pretty high on the list. Like, District 49, they have millions and millions of dollars. Let's see, a lot is supporting Sarah Jacobs, a Dem. You have a lot coming from Women Vote, so that Emily's List Super PAC we are talking about, and the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Those both spent in between $1 and $2 million. So that's really high on the list. You also have the District 48 and 39. District 48 has attracted $4.2 million so far, and District 39, $3.4 million. So a lot of these really close California districts are up there, at least in the top 10, 20 races.
So that's opensecrets.org that people can check on, along with your wonderful group, which I'd like to have you talk a little bit about, too, in a minute. So also down here, you have Citizens for a Working America.
Strong America.
Strong America. Yes, Citizens for a Strong America.
Yeah, so that's a group that spent hundreds of thousands of dollars backing its favorite Republicans. So a lot of that was spent in Pennsylvania, backing Brian Fitzpatrick, Dan Muser, Lloyd Smucker, and in Indiana, Jim Baird and Diego Morales. So we kind of looked into some, because they got some six- and five-figure donations that we found interesting, got $250,000 from Peter May, who is president of an investment management firm, $100,000 from a Dan Webb of Winston & Strawn LLP, and $10,000 from Kenneth Aldridge of Aldridge Electric.
Oh, okay. And then one other Democrat group that's kind of a cautionary tale, Put Vets First. They seem to sop up a lot of money, then it doesn't all go to the vets. You were talking a little bit about that. Do you want to let our listeners know about Put Vets First?
Sure, I could really talk to you about this for a whole entire hour.
Okay.
But I won't. And also, first of all, they actually give money to Democrats and Republicans. So they are not, they don't lean one particular direction. But so Put Vets First PAC is the political action committee that is run by a retired Army major named Brian Arthur Hampton. They have offices in Falls Church, Virginia. And also in that same office are two nonprofits. One is the Center for American Homeless Veterans, and the other is the Circle of Friends for American Veterans. So all three veterans organizations have the same funding model, and that is that they use telemarketing companies to raise millions of dollars for them. And 90%, 85 to 90% of that money goes right back out the door to the telemarketing companies. It does not help veterans. In fact, they most of the rest of the money, that 10, most of the rest of that 10% that they keep goes to pay salaries and overhead expenses, accounting firms, law firms, and then the CEO made $340,000 in 2015, the 2015-2016 fiscal year. And that was just from his two nonprofits alone. The following year, which we don't have the nonprofit report yet to tell us how much he made in 2017, but he made $110,000 in 2017 from his PAC, from his political action committee. So if you start to add all of that up, that's a massive compensation package for nonprofits of this size. They say that what they use the money for is to educate candidates, people running for office, about issues related to veterans. Since the story came out in December, since I published a first set of stories about this organization and the telemarketing companies that they use, the Virginia Attorney General and the New York Attorney General have both opened investigations into one of the two nonprofits. So we're following along with that to see how that turns out. The PAC really is kind of operating in this no man's land where there is not a lot of oversight in terms of what money is spent on. So the PAC right now is, continuing on as we've been reporting that they continue raising and spending money in the same way. It'll be interesting to see what is included in the groups, the nonprofits 990 forms, which are going to be hopefully available very soon. I'm going to be paying attention to how much the CEO paid himself last year and how much was spent on programs and how much was spent on fundraising.
I can't help but be curious what financial relationship the Army General has, the CEO, with the telemarketing companies.
It's a mystery, right? And I would love to know that. And I'm hoping that in some way, some information might come out in the Attorney General investigations, some information that is not available. You know, they're probably going to be going through their books pretty closely to see what kind of financial relationships there are.
Yeah, the Attorney General can get at that information then.
With subpoenas, yes. Mm-hmm.
So why, obviously they're all happy making all this money, but they could do this another way without spending gazillions on the telemarketing, correct? Not all groups
yeah,
do.
Yeah, and to be fair, Brian Arthur Hampton has said numerous times, look, you know, I've tried to run nonprofits without telemarketers. I've tried to raise money on my own, and it's very difficult, and it's time-consuming, and it's not cost-effective. So, yeah, that's true. However, if you look at what other telemarketing companies keep out of the money that they raise, there are several states out there that publish the amount of money nonprofits, charities raise, and the amount of money they spend on their telemarketers, on their fundraisers. New York has great records available online. And if you look there, you can see that the telemarketing company Outreach Calling, which is the main one used by Brian Arthur Hampton, they are on the top of the list in terms of the percentage, the share that they keep. So there are less expensive if telemarketing is the route that he feels like he needs to go, there are less expensive telemarketers out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one last time, I'll mention it to listeners, the number here, if you want to squeeze in one last call, is 895-2448. And we have an opportunity in the meantime to talk about the Center for Public Integrity. I see a lot of interesting articles are on your front page right now.
Yeah, so we're a nonprofit newsroom based in Washington, D.C. Sarah Kleiner and I, Ashley Balzerzak, we are federal politics reporters, but we have reporters, great investigative reporters, covering all topics from immigration to the environment to the national influence on state politics to national security. So you guys should check us out. We're great.
You don't lack for content to write about these days, I imagine.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover.
Do you want to give our listeners a little taste about how you do this? It's so complicated, all these filings and all these different groups everywhere. How do you do it? Do you have any tips for people that want to do this at their own home?
Yeah. So the story that we kind of based a lot of the show off of, we do a monthly story because
most groups have to file every month. There are some that have to file four times, but most are every month, the 20th of every month. So ProPublica, another nonprofit newsroom, they have this tool called the FEC Itemizer, and that's a really great tool to kind of go through and see what groups are spending, raising, who they're spending from, what they're spending on, and that's a great start if you guys are kind of dipping your toes. There's also Open Secrets that we had mentioned, and just on our articles, we try to show our work as much as possible, so we'll link to all of the original documents or from the source material that we use. So you should check out our work on our site.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in researching charities, then you can learn how to read a 990 and use GuideStar as a source for those. Or if you don't want to go that far in the weeds, then you can use sites like Charity Navigator or Charity Watch that go through the 990s for you and rank them and rate them.
Wow, GuideStar, that sounds fascinating.
That's a new term. And then yeah. Charity Watch is the other one you mentioned?
Yes, Charity Watch, Charity Navigator. Both of those organizations go through 990s with a fine-tooth comb and basically provide ratings about, are they using funds in a properly, or are they spending too much on fundraising, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and your own organization was mentioned in the middle of the program, but that's Public Integrity at www.publicintegrity.org. And you each have a page there. Actually, so there's a place to go to look at our people. So if you look at the people tag, and then you can find both of our guests today, Ashley Balzerzak and Sarah Kleiner. And there will be a, what's the right word? Not a discography, obviously, but, a chronological list of the articles that you've published or co-published. And there's also their contact information is there for both of our guests today.
And, of course, there's
Facebook.
And you
can follow us on Twitter, too.
Yes,
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Reddit.
Yes, you've got all the social media covered.
Okay, so we are out of time. Do you want to see us out after we thank our guests, Sarah Kleiner and Ashley Balzerzak, so profusely? Thank you so much for your time and energy and information. It's just invaluable.
And again, that's from the Center for Public Integrity in Washington at www.publicintegrity.org. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for your great questions.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, care.
Well, you've been listening to Corporations and Democracy, broadcast on 2nd and 4th Tuesdays from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KZYXNZ. The next edition of Corporations and Democracy will be in 2 weeks, Tuesday, June 26th, with host Linda McClure. Andy and I will return in July on the second Tuesday. That'll be July 10th. And for further information about what you can do to correct the corporate dominance of our democracy, go to www.thealliancefordemocracy.org. And thanks for listening.
Corporations are not people, and we're taking our election.